Jerubinir by the Mishnah on the top of Memalaf Amud Aleph. Aleilu Muvinim Shochatim Et Abachor Upsulei Amukdashim Niftim Aleim. So this is a summary statement about all the Mishnayot that we saw until now. The problem with the statement is that it was the opening clause that we used also beforehand, and therefore the question is, why is it additive? But what the Mishnah is saying is that everything we've seen until now is a description of mumim that are sufficiently considered to be mumim, that not only does it disqualify the animal from being brought as a korban, it also suffices to allow you to shech the bechor. I mean, it's a mum that will allow you to shech the bechor because it's no longer bechor tam, it's a bechor ba mum. And if it is regular kodeshim, if you find such a mum in it, you can redeem the animal because of that mum. So that's a threshold that it meets in terms of mumim. So that's a summary of what we've seen. And the Gemara asks, Hatu lomali, what do we need this statement? Hatan alei reisha. That's how we opened up this section. Alei lomumim shochatim et habechor. What are the mumim that qualify to shech the bechor? So if you already have that statement as the opening clause, the opening position, then why do you need a summary statement that says the same thing at the end? Where it says, Seifa itztrichleit, we need this closing clause over here, because psuloi hamukdashim niftim aleihem, to tell us not only is it good enough to shech the bechor, it's also good enough to redeem psuloi hamukdashim, in that the opening statement was, aleilu mumim shochtim et habechor. That was only about bechor. Here you have a summary statement that includes not only Bechor, but also Psulei HaMikdashim. It says, Hanami Pshita. That's pretty straightforward too. Mishkat Shechtinan Mifrak Miboi. If you can shecht the Bechor based on this mum, then certainly you can redeem an animal that is Psulei HaMikdashim. If it is sufficiently strong enough of a mum to allow you then to shecht the Bechor outside the Mikdash, then of course it's going to be good enough to allow you to redeem Psulei HaMikdashim. Shechita, to take away the level of Kedushah, to allow you to shecht it, is a much more stringent or higher threshold that you would have to meet. If that's the case, then certainly you can redeem Psulei HaMukdashim. Ela, Aide Ditana Shlosha, Hosif Vamrulo Lo Shamanu. When we saw before that Ela in Yavna brought an additional 3 mumim, and the Chachamim there responded and said, Amrulo Lo Shamanu Et Elu, or Lo Shamanu Ela Et Elu, it depends on which way we read it yesterday. It means that we only heard these, which means all the ones that we heard before. Or lo shamanu et elu, we didn't hear about these 3 that you mentioned. Either way, v'ktani va'ati di'yechida v'katzasatim la v'kulu al elu mumim shokhatim et bachor tzulam ktashim nivtim aleim. So despite the fact that it was mentioned there by Ela and the Chachamim rejected it, then we continue to write other items or other mumim that are attributed to singular individuals. The Rambam really says that it's speaking about that case of Ela. The difficulty with that is that the Mishnah by Ela says right afterwards that Beit Din Acharim, a later Beit Din, accepted all of those things that Ela mentioned. So then you wouldn't need a statement here at the end. And that's why most interpret the statement here of the Gemara as referencing not to Ela, but to the other items that we mentioned in yesterday's daf that are brought by Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus and Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. These are all mumim that were mentioned by particular individuals. And you would have thought, when it's brought to Dat Yachid, that the Chachamim disagree, or that's not accepted the halacha. So this closing statement comes to indicate, becomes Satim la Bekulu. And now it gives you a stam statement at the end, that Aleilu, and all these mumim, including all the mumim that we mentioned before, including those of Ela, including those of Rabbi Chanina ben Tignus, those of Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, all of those mumim, they're included in this last statement, which is, Aleilu mumim. On these mumim, you can shech the bechor, and on these mumim, psulim tashim niftim aleihem. So it's a way to then cover those latter individuals who you would have thought the halacha might not be like, because they are brought as yechidim, and true by Ela as well, even though over there it mentions specifically in Beit Din Shel Acharim, accepted Ela's statement, that could have been a later addition to the Mishnah, and this covered that as well. That might be what you have to say for the Rambam's explanation. But for others, it's just referring to these latter Mishnayot that have a Dat Yachid or attributed to a Dat Yachid. This closing statement says the halacha is also like those individuals. Right, next Mishnah. Ve'elu she'ein shochatim aleihem lo b'mikdash ve'lo b'medina. Here's the next series of mumim that are not at high enough threshold that it will allow you to shech the Bechor if it has such a mum. Not high enough threshold to allow you to redeem Sulei HaMakdushim, but it is a high enough threshold to disqualify the animal from going on the Mizbeach. So in essence, it's a disqualifying mum, but it is not strong enough to have you shech the animal, redeem it, and you will require another mum or mum kavua in order to accomplish that. So these are not in the Mikdash, meaning it's disqualified from the Korban or being put on the Mizbeach. Lo mimidina means it's not permitted to be shechted outside, which means a Bechor can't be shechted, and Sulei HaMakdushim can't be redeemed. So the first are the Chavar Var V'amayim She'en Kvuim. This is in contrast to the Mishnah that we saw earlier, which was the Chavar Var V'amayim She'en Kvuim, that they are Kavua, and we saw in the Gemara the test that they have to do with the grain that was Lach Yavesh, that you have to do it over a period of time of 80 days, to see if you can get it to resolve itself. And over here we're speaking about the chavarvar, which are these spots on the cornea and a mayim, and this liquid that is einan kvuim, that are not permanent, which do not stay there, which means that they are a curable problem. And since they will go away or they will dissipate, it's called a mumover. Since it's a mumover, it can disqualify the animal while it's still there from going on the mizbeach, but since it will pass, since it will resolve, you can't shech the animal on it because it's not considered to be a mum kavur, a sufficiently strong mum. Tosafot back there discussed as to whether medicinal cures are sufficient reason to believe that a mum is not a mum kavua. And over there, Tosafot said that it requires intervention and medical assistance in order to cure or resolve itself. Then in that situation, we do not consider it to be a mum over. It is a mum kavua. Because it's only because of your intervention that it's cured. Had it been that it cures and resolves itself, then it's a mumover. So here you'd have to say that these items are inam kvuim, they're not permanent, they're not something that remains because they will resolve themselves, not because you cure them, but because they take care of themselves over a period of time. V'chutim apnimiyot shenif gimu. Or, now Rashi calls the chutim apnimiyot the inner gums, whereas the Rabbeinu Gershom says it's referring to the molars, that were nifgimu, that were cracked, that were damaged in some way, abalosha nekru, but they were not uprooted. We saw again in the previous Mishnayot that if they were uprooted, it becomes a mum shebegalui. Because when the animal holds up its mouth wide, you can see that all the molars are missing. You can see that the gums are taken out in the back. But here, where it's only cracked, or it's damaged, that's not a sufficient mum to be called a mum shebegalui, to shech the animal, to redeem tzulef the shim, but it's sufficient to not be called mufchar. That it's no longer the best of your item that you're bringing before Hashem. Therefore, it's disqualified from going on the Mizbeach. So it's referring to those items in the back of the mouth, whether it's the molars, Rabbeinu Gershom, for Rashi, it's the gums that are damaged but not uprooted. In that case, it disqualifies it, but it's not a sufficient mum to shecht it on. Ubal Garav, Ubal Yabelet, Ubal Chazazit. I'm going to leave these to the Gemara, which is going to discuss them. But loosely, we're speaking about Shchin, as Rashi notes over here, which are issues of boils, blisters that are on the individual. The Baal Yabelet, we already discussed in yesterday's daf, as to when a Yabelet is considered to be a Mum Kavua, and when a Yabelet is not considered to be a problem at all, and also whether a Yabelet is disqualifying, but not strong enough to be a Mum. And in yesterday's daf, we said that a Baal Yabelet in this Mishnah is a case where it's either found in the white of the eye, and it has hair growing out of it, because that's already ma'us. And since it's ma'us, that disqualifies it from going in his back, but it's not considered to be a mum kavua in order to check the animal on it. Or, according to Tosafot, it was a yabelet that's found in the black of the eye, and it's without hair. So one of those two, depending on what the girsa was in the Gemara yesterday, the Machloket Rashi and Tosafot, then this Yabelet over here is a Yabelet that does not qualify to shecht in it, because it doesn't have an etzem, it doesn't have a bone in it, which would have made it into a mum kavua, both if it was found in the eye or found in the goof. And then you have the Baal Chazazit and Baal Garav, which we're going to get back to. Zakein, if it's old. V'choleh, if it is sick. It's not clear here what the definition of Zakein and Choleh is. The Gemara will discuss it a little bit, but those many indicate that zakein means that because of its age, it either shakes, it's not steady. It shows signs of weakness. And the same would be true with a kolet, an animal that is sick. Umizuham, that it has a terrible smell to it. It's malodorous. Vishenevda bo avera, or some avera was performed with it. And then the Mishnah uses this type of term. It's a reference to arayot, which means that there was bestiality performed with it. Veshemit adam, or it killed an individual. Alpi erachad, or alpi balim. It's a question of whether this should be in the Girsa, because the Gemara is going to ask the question and then say this answer, which seems to imply that it's not found in the Mishnah. Others say that they're trying to figure out what's going on in the Braita, and our Mishnah, using our Mishnah to do that, and our Mishnah has that information, which is, if it really was bestiality, or it killed someone, the animal is subject to a death penalty. It needs to be killed. It needs to be killed. It certainly can't go on the Mizbeach, because it's not Mutar Yisrael. It's not Mimashke Yisrael, then it certainly can't go on the Mizbeach. Or you could argue that it's Ma'us, and it shouldn't go on the Mizbeach. So then, the situation has to be a case where it's not going to be put to death. And that's a case where there's only a single aid that is testifying about these matters, and that would not result in a death penalty because you need two aidim. Or it's the balim themselves, the owners themselves, admit to the fact that their animal has been involved in such an activity, whether it's they themselves and you have to say palgina dibura, or whether it's someone else that they're identifying. The balim over here, once they've admitted that's the case, then there's no death penalty over here, but the animal is disqualified from going on the mizbeach. Mitumtum v'androgynous. And similarly, an animal that is a tumtum and androgynous, we'll spend more time on this later in today's daf and then tomorrow's daf. Now, androgynous is an animal that displays both genders. It has both the male and the female reproductive systems. A tumtum is an animal that displays no gender. The Gemara will discuss the fact that tumtum, in the end, is one of the two genders. You just have to be able to identify it. And that's because there was a lack of development or maturity to reach the point where the gender is visible. And so then you have to tear it open, or you can look inside and figure out whether it's a zachar or whether it's a nekeva. Androgynous, on the other hand, displays both of them, and it is not discernible, or it may not be easily discernible as to which of the two it is, whether it's a zachar or nekeva. And it leads to us to multiple positions with regards to this. Elo b'migdash, belo b'medina. All of these items cannot be shechted, not in the Migdash, means disqualified from the Mizbeach. Lo b'medina, you can't use it as a mum to shech the Bechor or to redeem the Psulei HaMukdashim. Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Ein lecha mum gadol mizeh. There's no greater mum than being an androgynous. It seems to be that's what he's addressing over here. And the Gemara will indicate that, which is that if he is really a zachar, if he's really a male, then the female genitalia become a mum inside of the male. And so there he says, you basically have a bechor that is a bechor bal mum. It's a bechor with its mum together with it. Now, either you could argue that, and the Gemara will discuss this, that he believes that it's either a nekeva or a zachar. If it's a nekeva, it's not kadosh b'kdushat bechor. If it's a zachar, it has its mum with it. So mimanav shach, you are okay. Or does he really believe that it is a zachar with a mum in it, and therefore it automatically can be shechted based on that fact? That's the view of Rabbi Yishmael. Chamim omrim, einu bechor ela nigzaz v'ne'avad. It doesn't qualify to be bechor at all. You can do whatever you want with it. I mean, you can shear it, you can work with it. It has no kedushat bechor, and we'll see in the Gemara that is because they believe that it is a birya b'fnei atzma. It's its own status. It's not a zachar, not a nekeva. It's its own unique status, and therefore it doesn't qualify to be a bechor whatsoever. Right now the Gemara says, vigarav lo. Garav is not a sufficient type of mum to check the animal on. Va'aktiv garav bidoraito. Wait a minute. Garav is one of the mumim that is mentioned in Parshat Emor, in Perachavet, Pasuk Chavet. It says that that's a mum sufficient to not only disqualify, but a full-fledged mum. You're telling me in the Mishnah that garav is not sufficient in order to be considered a mum kavua by which you can shecht it outside of the Mikdash for a bechor or redeem it from Psulei HaMukdashim. Because it says here, Averet, O Shavur, O Charutz, O Yabelet, O Garav, O Yalefet, Lo Takrivu Elu Lashem, Bishel Lo Nidu Mehem Al Mizbeach Lashem. These are full-fledged mumim. So how can you make a claim in the Mishnah that garav is not sufficient to be called a mum? When the Torah mentions garab, it's one of the examples of mumim that are serious mumim. The Gemara says, v'chazazid lo, and you tell me chazazid also, v'aktiv, yalefet bidoraito. And in addition to that, we also know yalefet, which is mentioned in that pasuk that we just read, is also in the Torah, v'tanya. And we have a braita, garab z'acheres, yalefet zo chazazid hamitzrit. So here you see that garab is equal to cheres. We'll have to discuss what that means. Yalefet is equal to chazazit amitzrit. In our mission, we mentioned both garav, and we mentioned chazazit as not being sufficient mumim to shech the animal on. Yet in the Torah, both of them are mentioned. Garav explicitly, and chazazit through the word yalefet, which the Braita tells us is the same thing as chazazit amitzrit. V'amarish lakish, lamini krashma yalefet. Why is it called a yalefet if it really is chazazit? That's because mishim elefet v'olechet ad yom amitah. That's because it clings to the individual and stays with them until the day they die. And it's something that never resolves itself. It's a permanent mum. And it's a permanent mum that has to be claimed in our Mishnah. That's only a disqualifying mum. It's not a mum that is strong enough to shecht it on. Bishlam al-chazazit, a-chazazit lokasha. The chazazit problem we can resolve. Kan b'chazazit ha-mitzrit. If you took note of it in the bright, it's called yalefet chazazit ha-mitzrit. So there, it's a specific type of chazazit. Kan chazazit alma. Our Mishnah is speaking about regular chazazit. So there is a distinction between them. And therefore, chazazit mitzrit, which is the elephant of the Torah, that's something that does not go away. That is something that's considered to be a full-fledged mum. The chazazit of our Mishnah is not chazazit mitzrit. That's something that does resolve itself and will only be either a mum over or only be a mum that is disqualifying but not good enough to shech the animal on. Ela garav agarav kasho. What are you going to do with the garav issue? You have a garav mentioned in the Torah, which is a full-fledged mum. You have garav that's mentioned in our Mishnah, which is only a disqualifying mum. Garav agarav nami lo kasha. That's not a problem. Habalach habi yavesh. Depends if it's a moist or a dry one. Lach itse. If it is moist, it will resolve itself. It can cure itself. Yavesh lo mitse. But if it's dry, it will remain there permanently. And it's a mum kavua. So then, a moist garav, which is, again, a type of blister, a type of shchin that you have, that blister or growth or some sort of rash, the warts that come on the individual, if it is dry, it's not going to resolve itself, and that's the one that the Torah is speaking about. If it is moist, then it does resolve itself, and that'll be what our Mishnah is speaking about. The Gemara says, V'lach mitzei. Is it really true that the moist type resolves itself? V'aktiv, in the Tochacha it says, Yakacha Hashem. Hashem will hit you with, he will plague you with, Bishchin Mitzrayim, the boils of Mitzrayim, Ubetachorim, Ubegarav, Ubacheres, Asher lo tichal lehirape. That he gives all these types of diseases that are not curable. Now, Umirichtiv, in that pasuk it says, Ubacheres, it talks about something that is cheres, which is clearly dry. Hare garav, lach. That means that the garav has got to be something that is moist. So how can you tell me that it's something that is dry, then it doesn't resolve itself? If it is moist, it will resolve itself. In the same pasuk, you have garav and you have cheres. They're the same thing, which is what we saw in the Braita before. Garav equals cheres. Cheres is pottery. It's something that's dry. So cheres is a description of a dry item. Garav must be a description of a moist item. And the pasuk says, Amor, or Dichtiv, lo tuchal iperpe. You cannot cure it. It's an incurable problem. So if that's the case, then even moist types of garav do not resolve themselves. Elatzlatahavu. There's three types of garav, and that's the solution to the problem. Dikra, the one of the pasuk is, Yavesh, ben bimifnim, ben bimachutz. It's dry, in and out. Which means the garav that's found in Parshat Emor, where it says that it is not curable, it's a permanent mum, that's speaking about something that's dry through and through. The Matznitan, our Mishnah, where it resolves itself, that is lach mibachutz umibifnim. It's moist internally, and it's moist externally. Whether that means there's pus inside, and that there's a softer live skin that has a protrusion out of it outside, or whether that means that it just has blood inside of it, whatever it means that it's lach on the inside and lach on the outside. Di Mitzrayim, the one that's mentioned in the pasuk of Shechin Mitzrayim, is yavesh mi bifnim, vilach mi bachutz. That is dry out internally, but moist on the outside. Dichtiv, and I can prove that to you because it speaks about the Shechin of Mitzrayim. It says vayishchin ababuot poreach ba'adam. They were blisters or boils that grew on the individual. Poreach, that were expanding or spreading. Poreach is an indication of swelling. And Rashi says over here, poreach hainu shenireh lemala, devar abolet, something that's sticking out. And ababuot mean bubbles, which is that it is lach. It is moist. It looks like a bubble or something on the outside. So given that, that's the outside is lach and the inside is dried out. Tosafot does ask, how is it then if it's Shechin Mitzrayim is mentioned in the Pasuk, then why is Garav also mentioned in the Pasuk? Because there you have Cheres, Garav, and Shechin Mitzrayim. Gemara never addresses what's the difference between Shechin Mitzrayim and Garav. So it depends on where Garav is found. When Garav is found alone, it is a reference to something dry. When Garav is found in contrast to Cheres, then it's something that is moist. So, in the case of the Pasuk in Dvarim, where it mentions it in contrast to Cheres, then the Garav there is moist on the outside, dry on the inside, something that cannot be cured, but that's the type of Garav that we're speaking about. The Garav that's alone in the Pasuk in Emor, which is driving the Mumim, that's a dry item, and that's dry through and through, and that again is not curable. And therefore we have these three types of Garav. The garav of our Mishnah, which is moist through and through, which does resolve itself. You have the garav in Parshat Emor, which is a mum kavua, is dry through and through. And then you have the garav of the pasuk in Devarim, which in contrast to Cheres, which is dry through and through, this garav is dry on the inside, moist on the outside, but it's also something lo tuchal leibrapei. It does not resolve itself, does not cure itself, and therefore it also would be seemingly a sufficient mum. But in that context, it's just speaking about the inability to resolve it or to cure it. So now Gemara says, "Vazakein v'choleh v'mizuam," that all of these are disqualified. Mina hanei mile. How do we know that this is the case? The Tanur Banan, mina tzon, o mina kvasim, o mina izim. So the psukim that they're referencing to are the korbanot olah that are mentioned in the beginning of Parshat Vayikra. In Vayikra Aleph, it says, "Ve'im mina tzon korbano." Mina kvasim o mina izim. If you bring it from the flock animals, whether it's from the sheep or whether it's from the goats, you can bring in ola. The Gemara is darshaning in all these cases the word min, from. And they say that min is a mute. Because it says, from amongst the tzon, you may bring. From amongst the kvasim, from amongst the izim. Min means not all of them, but only some of them. So, some of them means that certain ones are disqualified. And that's what the Gemara says here. Minatzon savim min hat izim prat lizokain lecholer olamuzulamam. Each one of these words mean excludes one item. One of them excludes the zakain, one of them the choler, and one of them zuam. It's riche, and I need to exclude all three of them. Gikatav rachmana limute zakain, had it only come to exclude an aged out animal, to lo hadar bario, because it doesn't get healthy again. It's aged to the point where it's weak or it's shaking. It's not something that's going to get better. About choled, ahadar baria, emelo. An animal that's sick, that could recover from it, or could get healthy again, maybe that should not be disqualified from the mizbech. V'ikatav demute choled, delav orche. Had you only told me that a sick animal is disqualified, maybe that's because it's not in its usual state. It's something that's irregular for the animal. Abzakein, dain orche. Just because the animal's old, that's the way animals grow. That's the maturing process of the animal. Maybe that's not a disqualifying factor. Same alone, so maybe there wouldn't be disqualified. Because Rachmana Trey, if it wrote both Chole and Zakein, the Mutehani, the Kishe, those that are weak. So that's part of what the definition is of a Chole and a Zakein here is clearly weakness. That's what the Gemara says here. Balmzuam, the Lokachish, the animal that is malodorous, which is not weak, it's full strength. Aim alone, maybe there it would not be disqualified. Vinami the Mute Mzuam, had you only mentioned Mzuam, Mishum Demais, because it's disgusting. It smells so bad that you would, of course, not want to bring something like that as a korban. Avohani d'lomise, by a choleh, by zakein, they're not disgusting. They might be weak, but they're not disgusting. Emelom, maybe they would not be disqualified. Tzrichei, that's why we need all three of them. Right. So you have to say, and we're going to see this in a second again, that Chazal clearly had a mesora as to which things are excluded and which things are included. Just because the word min tells you that something's excluded, it doesn't tell you what is excluded. And that was left up to the Chachamim, either through mesora or through their abilities to understand what should be excluded. They are the ones who determine what is excluded and what is included. Nothing obvious in the word min that tells you not these items. It just means that these are the items that we have in mesora that are excluded, and we have miutim. So we're going to match up those things that are excluded with the miutim that we have. How do I know that an animal that had an avera formed with it, meaning that bestiality, how do I know that's excluded? The Tarabanan, min aveima. So again here, in the beginning of Vayikra, it uses the word min again, and it says, Daber el b'nei Yisrael, amar t'lehem adam ki yakim mikem korban Hashem, min aveima, min abakar, min atzon. So here you have another series of miutim. Min aveima, lotzi roveya minir ba. And a behemah comes to exclude an animal which bestiality was performed with it. Min abakar, lotzi et ha-ne'avad. And a bakar comes to exclude an animal that was worshipped as avodah zarah. Min atzon, lotzi et ha-mukseh, is to exclude an animal, Rashi says over here, that was huksa vehufrash l'tzorech uvedek kuchavim. Other places, Shonim argue about whether mukseh means that it was designated for avodah zarah, tikrovet avodah zarah, or whether it was utilized in the process of doing something with the avodah zarah. Uminatzon, lotzi et ha-nogeach. Minatzon comes to exclude a goring animal. Now obviously a goring animal is not going to be excluded just because it gores, but it means nogeach, it kills someone when they gore them. Hane b'nei k'talaninu. Gemara asks about this braita, aren't these animals that are subject to a death penalty? Al pi erachad o al pi avalim. The answer to that question is, it was evidenced only by a single aid or by the owners themselves. Therefore, they're not subject to a death penalty. This is why some do not goreis in our Mishnah this item, because otherwise, what's the Gemara's question already? You would have known that from the Mishnah. Why are you asking it? So therefore, they don't think it should be in the gears of the Mishnah. Others suggest that the Gemara is dealing with the Braita, not the Mishnah, and it's using the quote from the Mishnah to answer the problem with the Braita. Bishlama tumtum b'migdash lo. I understand why you can't bring a tumtum as a korban. Dilman akevai. Because maybe it's a female. If it's a female, it doesn't have kushat bichor. And then you're bringing chulin ba'azara. Ube medina. I understand lo. Why you can't shecht it in the medina. Dilman zacharu. Because maybe it's a male and it would be kadosh kushat bichor and you need a moment in order to allow you to eat it outside of the mikdash. So, each one of this sefekot will leave you with a problem. If it's an akeva, you can't bring it as a korban. If it's a zachar, you can't shecht it outside. That's why your tumtum is disqualified from the mizbeach, but also not strong enough to allow you to shecht it in the medina. Belepe muma. And there is no mum over here. And given all that information, there's nothing you can do except wait for another mum in the animal. Ela androgynous. With regards to androgynous, vishlam abe migdash lo. I understand why you can't bring it in the migdash. Dilman akevai. Because maybe it is a female and it's not kadosh, but kedushat bechor. Ela b'medina. By the medina, mimon of shach, you should be able to shecht it. Nehi de zacharu. So then, even if you want to say that it's a zachar, so if it's a female, you clearly can shecht it in the medina because it's chulin legamre. If it's a zachar, where it is kadosh, but kedushat bechorah, taseh nekevot charitz, let the female genitalia or reproductive system that's there be classified as a charitz, and then you could shecht it based on that mum. Or in essence, it's a bechor b'mumo. Because if it is a zechar, then the female additions to this animal are unnecessary, don't belong there, and they are classified as a mum, a charitz. Amar Abaye, Amar Kra. Abaye says, the pasuk says, O charutz, O shabur, charutz, dumya de shabur. Because the pasuk says, which we just quoted before from Parshat Emor, the mumim that you have there are charutz and shabur. Charutz means that it has some sort of crack in it, and shabur means it's broken. Charutz dumi de shabur. Just like you have to have charutz similar to shabur. Mas shabur bimkom etzem. Just like a shever is in a place where there's a bone, you can only break bones, you can't break skin or flesh. Av charutz bimakom etzem. So too, the crack has to be in a place where there is a bone. And obviously, where the female reproductive system is, that's a charitz in basar. That's in the flesh of the animal. That's not a charutz in the etzim of the animal. That's why it doesn't qualify as a mum over here. Rav Amar, below shavur nami, lo matzit amart charutz, kom basar avi muma. Even without this hekesh that Abaye makes between charutz and shavur, you would have also come to the conclusion that a charutz that is in a place where there's flesh is not classified as a real mum. Disakadat chavi muma, if you think it's a real mum, kevin damar garav zeu acheres, if you tell me that garav equals cheres, michratz choritz dichtiv, it must be that it has a crack or it has some sort of break in it, because the pasuk says umareu amok mina or, that the appearance of the nega is deeper than the skin level. Just like the sunlight looks deeper than the tzel, than the shade. So, this is complex and not clear as to what the Gemara is doing over here. The first would just deal with each piece independently and then try to piece it together to get a bigger picture. The first thing that the Gemara is quoting is with regards to Nega'im. And it says there that the appearance of the Nega is deeper. Rashi says in Chumash, and this is what the Gemara says over here, the reason it looks deeper is because it's white. The whiteness of the nega makes it look deeper. And the example they bring is if you go outside and you look where there's shade cast and there's light next to it, the light always visually looks deeper than the shade. Looks as if there's something that's deeper. And that's how, again, artists, when they're drawing something in two dimensions, they can create three dimensions by contrasting colors. And something that's dark versus something that's light gives a depth or a sense of depth. So too over here, when you're dealing with a tzarat is deeper because it is white. And the whiter it is, the deeper it looks. And that's problematic because certain white levels or certain thresholds of white become nigayim. So that's one piece of it. The other thing is, garav zeu acheres. We said that before that garav, these blisters, this shchin, is classified as cheres. Now, michratz choritz, it has a depression or it has some sort of cut in it. The problem is, how do you know that? It's not clear here how Rava makes this leap. The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom says is, garav nami charutz, dava mashma charutz, because the word cheres means charutz. It's not clear why cheres means charutz, but the Gemara here says garav equals cheres, and then what the Rabbeinu Gershom says is, cheres equals charitz. But he doesn't tell you how you know that cheres equals charitz. Elaim, can you say that they sound similar? Cheres and charitz have a similar tone to them. Maybe that's the issue. Or the issue is that cheres is a dry shkin, as we said before. And maybe when you have a dry shkin, it cracks or creates cracks over there. Then, what does that have to do with nega'im? If you're telling me a garav is not a nega, but it is a cheres, then what does it have to do with nega'im? Nega'im are not... Cheres is not dried out, they're not shchin, it's some other phenomenon, some other problem on the body, on the skin. Now, they're both problems on the skin, but they are different problems on the skin. And it's saying here that the nega, because of its color, looks deep on the skin, but that's, again, a visual illusion that you see the depth. It's not mean that there really is deep. So, you might have to say that it's maybe a kal vachomer. If by the nega, where it is not really a charutz, but nevertheless, it is looking deeper, then certainly that something is charutz, that is deeper, that really is something that is considered to be a depression. Again, it's very hard to understand how he pieces all of this together, but Rava's conclusion is that garav is definitely a charitz. And if garav is a charitz, then why do you need the word garav to be mentioned at all? Because, v'lechtov rachmana charutz, v'lo bai garav. And all you have to do is mention charutz, and garav would have been subsumed in it. Vamina charutz dolo mais avimuma, charutz, which is simply a crack or depression in the skin and the flesh, that's considered to be a mum. Garav de mais, garav that has, in addition to that, not just the cracking or the depression in the skin, but also disgusting, lokosh can certainly be a problem. So kadav rachmana garav, despite that fact, the Torah wrote garav, lameimar de charutz b'makam basar lo avimuma, to teach you that a charitz, where there is flesh, is not considered to be a mum, and therefore you need to tell me that garav is problematic, because otherwise it would be a charutz b'makom basar, And that's not something that would qualify. Karutz means by etzem, and then garav is the exceptional case, because it's a shkin, and it's b'makom basar, there it is considered to be problematic. But a stam charitz in a place of basar would not qualify as a mum. So from both Abaye and Rofa, you come to the conclusion that a charitz b'makom basar is not sufficient a mum. And so therefore, the question that the Gemara is posing over here is, Drigonos, I understand why in the Mikdash it's disqualified, because it could be a Nekeva. But as far as Medina, why and I am not cleared Mimonovshah? So we're cleared either because it's a Nekeva, it's not a Bechor, or it's a Zachar with a Mum in it. The answer is that this type of Mum is not a disqualifying type of Mum. And that's what Abai and Rav explained to us, that a Charitz, Pemakom Basar, is not considered to be a Mum. So you have a Bechor, but you don't have Mumo Imo. Now, the problem is that Rabbi Shmuel in the Mishnah says exactly that. Rabbi Shmuel says that it's Bechor Umumo Imo. So he clearly disagrees with the Abaye and Rava in our Mishnah. Obviously, they're not arguing because the Abaye and Rava are Moraim. Rabbi Shmuel is a Tana. Abaye and Rava are explaining the position of the Tanakama. Question is, now how does Rabbi Shmuel disagree with Abaye and Rava's explanation of the Tanakama? That is what the Gemara says here. Ke Abaye lo Amar. He does not subscribe to Abaye's explanation, because even though the Tanakhama might say there's a Hekesh, Rabbi Shmuel doesn't have that Hekesh between Charutz and Shavur. So it doesn't mean that the Charutz needs to be Makom Etzem. That's only true where it's not visible. Maybe it is that we say that a Charutz Makom Basar is not a Mum. That's where it's not a very easily discernible crack. It's something that's not visibly obvious that it has a crack there. But if you have something more significant, like the female reproductive system, or the female genitalia, where it's really obvious that there's a crack and there's a hole in the basar over there, that already maybe is sufficient to be considered a mumra. That is something that would then make it that you could check the bechor based on that. So that's the way that Rabbi Shmuel would disagree with the Tanakhama. And in disagreeing with the Tanakhama, he's got to explain why Abaye and Rava's explanations for the Tanakhama are incorrect. And we just did that by saying either by Abaye, he doesn't hold of the Hekesh between Charutz and Shavur, and by Rava, by differentiating between a Charitz by the Basar that is not so visible, versus a Charitz by the Basar that is very visible and very obvious, maybe there's a difference between them, and therefore Rabbi Shmuel believes that the female reproductive system or genitalia that are found there in this Andrigonos is a Bechor, Umumo imo. Now the Gemara says, "Hey Rava, my taimo de Rabbi Yishmael. What is the reasoning behind Rabbi Yishmael?" Gemara asks about Rabbi Yishmael, but does not ask about the Tanakhama. And Tosfot says, "Why don't they ask the same question about the Tanakhama?" So Tosfot says over here, because of the fact that Rabbi Yishmael in the Braita says, "Bechoru umumo imo," Michlal the Tanakhama lo be vaday bechor. According to the Tanakhama, it's clearly not a bechor. And it is something that is a safek. The question is, within Rabbi Shmuel's position, is it mifsha pshitalei to andrigonos bechorhu? Is he clear that a andrigonos is classified as a bechor? Umumo imo. But it has a mum with it. It is definitely kadosh b'kdushat bechor. It just has a mum. So that allows you to shecht it b'midina. Oh, dilma spuke misapkele. Or maybe he is uncertain. V'imtim salomar kamar. And he's saying, well, if this is the case, then this, if this is the case, then this. If it's a nekeva, it's not a bechor. Imtim salomar, even if you think it is a zachar, and it's a bechoru, hare mumo imo, that its mum is with it. Rashi over here says, the domus musvuka misvakele im zacharhu im nekevahu. Maybe he has a safek as to whether it's a zachar or nekeva. Look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says the safek is different. Safek da androgenus lovi birya bifnatsmo, el zacharhu. Or Dilma Birya Havya. So whether it's Safek is not whether it's a Zachar Nekeva, it's Safek is whether it's a Zachar, or maybe it's a Birya Bifnei Atzma, like the Rabbanan Batrai that we found in our Mishnah. So according to the Beinu Gershom, the Safek is about whether it's an independent entity, or it's a Zachar. According to Rashi, it's a question as to whether it's a Zachar or a Nekeva. So the question is, does he think Badai that this is a Bechor Zachar, and that's not a problem, because now it has a mum with it, and that's why you could shecht it b'midina. Or it's not sure if it's a bechor. So either it's a nekeva that should allow you to shecht it, because it's not kadosh b'kdushat bechor. And even if you think it is a zachar, it's zachar b'mumo imo. it's a bechor b'moimo, and that would also allow you to shecht it in the Medina, so mimon of shachri should be able to shecht it. Where it says, the my nafkamina. In either case, you can shecht the bechor b'medina, either because it's bechor b'moimo, or because it's either in a keva or a bechor b'moimo. No matter which way you formulate it, you can shecht it b'medina. L'milka alei mishum gizav avoda. What nafkamina is, if you shear it, or you do work with it, are you going to get malkot? If you believe that it is a real bechor, even a bechor ba'al mum, you're not allowed to do a voda with it, you're not allowed to shear it. And therefore you'd be subject to malkot. If you believe that it's a safek, I'm not sure if it's a nekeva and chulin, or it's a zachar b'mumo imo, then you're not going to get malkot, because there's a chance that this bechor is not kadosh at all, b'kdushat bechor. Inami, the mitzvah l'kohen. The other nafimina is whether you have to give it to the kohen. If it is a vadai bechor, then you must give it to the kohen. And it has its mum with it, so you can eat it right away. If it is a safek, then a safek bechor, a motzi mechaveru la baraya, the baalim get to keep it. And the baalim get to keep it. Either it's a nekeva, and they could eat it as chulin, or it's a zachar b'mumo imo, that's a bechor b'mumo imo, and the baalim can eat it b'mumo, because the monetary claim of the kohen requires that he bring evidence, and he can't bring evidence over here. Therefore, the baalim keep it, because there's no proof or evidence, the fact that they have to give up or disgorge the money. On the other hand, they can't treat it not like a bechor, because it's a safek, and they have to treat it like a bechor. So those are the two nafkaminot, depending on which way we formulate Rabbi Shmuel's position. So tashma, let's try to prove it from this braita. Rabbi Elai Omer Mishum Rabbi Yishmael, Androgynos Bechorhu Umimo Imo. So here you have a statement in the name of Rabbi Shmuel that seems definitive that a Androgynos is a bechor with its mum with it. Shmamina Mifshat Pshitole. Sounds from that it's pretty straightforward. He thinks it's a bechor, it's kadosh b'dushat bechor, it just has a mum with it. It says, V'dilma Im Tim Salomar Kamar. Who says that? Maybe he's just saying it is maybe in a kevav, and that's not a bechor. And even if you think it's a zachar, it's bechor b'mumo imo. Who says that he's making a definitive statement? He's just saying that if that is the issue, then it's mumo imo. So tashma, let's try to prove it from here. Zachar velo nekeva. Shu omer lamata zachar, shein tam alomar, you don't need it. Matam alomar. Why do you need to say it? Let's see, tumtum v'androgynos. That comes to exclude a tumtum and an androgynos. This goes back to, again, Vayikra Aleph with the Korban Ola. By the description of the Korban Ola, it says, Im Ola Korbano, Mina Bakar. If you're bringing it from the cattle, Zachar Tamim Yakvimenu, Petach O Moed, Yokiva Tolin Tzonoli Fnei Hashem. Over there, there's a demand that it be a male animal to bring a Korban Ola. So when it tells you the Bakar, the cattle, it tells you Zachar. And then you have, later on, in Pasuk Yud, Ve'im Minatzon. The Vav is a Vav of Chibor that says, if you bring it from the flock animals, then you can bring it minaksavim or minaizim leola zachar tamim yakrivenu. Again, it mentions the word zachar. Why do you have to mention zachar again? You've already defined for me what the type of animal it is that you bring as a korban. And just the only thing that changed over here was there was cattle. Over here it's tzon, it's the flock animals. And the vav says that whatever's true of the bakar is also true of the tzon. That makes the zachar that's found by the tzon extraneous. You don't need it. The first zachar comes to tell you it's a male animal, and an olah can only be a male animal. Why do I need the male, the word zachar, to be repeated again by the tzon? I already know that an olah is only something that comes from male animals. If that's the case, it's extraneous. The braita says, what do we do with it? It's coming to be mayet, tumtum, and androgynous. Mani, who's the author of this braita? Ilema Tanakama. If it's the Tanakama of our Mishnah, who says that an androgynous and a tumtum are sveka, sveko. It's a safek, ve'ati krali mute sveka. Well, you need a pasuk to come to tell you about a safek to address a safek. Over here, there's a very large Balei HaTosfot that is speaking to this issue, and that is that sometimes the Gemara brings a pasuk to address an issue of safek, and sometimes the Gemara makes a statement like this, which is, if it's a safek, why would the Torah address a safek? So, there is a distinction in their usage, and the Balei HaTosfot pointed out, it's most clear in the notes on the side here of the Tosafot, where he makes this description based on the Rosh Mishantz. What Tosafot says over here is, when something is a safek that will never be resolved, which means that you have here an androgynous. It is either a male or a female, but we'll never know whether it is a male or a female. Or other examples Tosafot brings is a koi, which is safek chaya, safek behema. We also have it by tchilat zihuv. The beginning of the yellowing of the feathers of the bird, We don't know if it makes it into a adult, a gadol, or a katan. What's the status there? That is something that will never be resolved. That type of safek, the Torah does not address. That is a problem for us. It's not a problem in general. We just don't know what categorically these items are. We don't know if an androgynous is considered a zachar or nekeva. But klape shemaya, for God's work, he knows what it is. So it's a safek that we don't know how to categorize it, but it has one of those two categories. The Torah is not going to address that because it either is a zachar or it either is a nekeva. We just don't know. And the Torah already addressed zachar and nekeva. It doesn't need to address the androgynous. On the other hand, when you have certain sfekot, are a safek because they manifest differently in different situations, which means that sometimes, like by a baheret, whether the hair came before the baheret, or the hair came after the baheret, or in cases like tumtum, where it's not clear whether it's a male or female, but it's something that can be determined if you just open up the animal. Sometimes it will be a male, sometimes it will be a female. It's not a safek as the zachar nekeva. It's just something that we at this point can't determine because the tumtum could sometimes be a zachar, sometimes be a nekeva. The baheret, sometimes the hair came before it, sometimes the hair came afterwards. It's something that you can't know because it manifests differently in different situations. It's not that we can't determine it, but it is one or the other. Over here, it's we can't determine it because sometimes it's like this, sometimes it's like that. In that case, the Tosafot says the Torah does address the safek. In those cases, the Torah will bring a word and say, zachar. It must be a real zachar, not something that sometimes is zachar, sometimes is in a keva. That the Torah will address. There will be psukim in order to undermine a safek. So in this case, it actually mentions tumtum and androgynous. The question is really on androgynous, and we'll see that maybe later on in the Gemara, that tumtum is not a safek, and then you would have to eliminate tumtum from this braita. That's a question in general as to what the implications of what we say here with regards to androgynous, how does it have application by tumtum? That will be determined by, first of all, the statement of Rav Chista that we're going to start with in tomorrow's daf, and the Baalei Tosafot discuss that within the context of the sheet of Rav and Rav Yochanan and Shas, whether they disagree with Rav Chista and therefore think that the din is the same for tumtum as it is for androgynous, or whether they agree to Rav Chista's position, and then we would differentiate between androgynous and tumtum. So we'll deal with that tomorrow. But for right now, the reason that the Torah doesn't address an androgynous by a safek is because it's simply an unknown. It is something that we can never know whether it's zachar or nekeva. It's something that we don't know how to categorize, but it is one or the other. And we just don't know how to deal with it. Tumtum or baheret or the other examples that Tosafot brings, our cases, the reason we don't know is because sometimes it's like this, and sometimes it's like that. You can say every androgynous is a zachar, every androgynous is an ekeva, we just don't know which of them it is. They're all the same, just don't know which way to go. Tumtum, each one of them can be different. Sometimes the baheret comes before the hair, sometimes the hair comes before the baheret. In that case, the Torah will address such a safek. So here we're dealing with androgynous. All the androgynous are exactly the same, and all have the same manifestation. Therefore, Pasuk should not be addressing it because it says Sveka. Ella Rabbanan Batrai. It must be that it is the latter Rabbanan, the Rabbanan at the end of the Mishnah, who say that it's a Birya Bifnei Atzma. Where it says, Michad Kra Nafke. They could learn it out of one Pasuk. Ta'agabe Bechor, Chad Zarachar Hu Dichtiv. By Bechor, it only mentions the word Zachar once. Bekama Mayetz Kulu Minayu. And they eliminate everything from it. Meaning the fact that the Bechor has only one time it mentions Zachar, and from that they exclude Nekeva, and they also exclude Androgynous. Question whether they also exclude a Tumtum as well. But they exclude Androgynous from that, because it's a Birya Bifnei Atzma. So if they only need one word Zachar, why over here by the Olah do they need the word Zachar twice? The word Zachar once would have been sufficient to eliminate it from it being a Nekeva as well as being an androgynous. Why do you need a second Zachar? El Pshita, it must be that the author of the Braita is Rabbi Ishmael. V'yamark Mishmael, Rabbi Ishmael, Mifsha Pshita Lei. Then it makes sense. If Rabbi Ishmael knows that for sure an androgynous is a Zachar, Hainu Nistrik Ra Limilute. That's why you need a Posuk to eliminate it. Rashi asks on that. The Baalei Tosafot bring this Rashi down as well as two other explanations to deal with the issue, which is, why do I need a pasuk? If it is a zachar and it's a mum, why do I need a specific pasuk to address the issue? Because that's, by definition, it's taken care of. It's a zachar. And it's got a mom in it. Why do I need a special pasuk to address such an issue? So Tosfot first brings from Rashi that the explanation is because what we then conclude was that by Bechor, where Rabbi Shmuel only has one word, Zachar, to exclude items, over there he says that an odrigonos has a din of a Bechor Baal Mum, and now it's Asur B'Giza B'Avodah. It has Kedusha associated with it. The Zachar over here, the extra Zachar that comes by Olah, comes to teach you, not only is it not a Kosher Korban, it doesn't even have any Kedusha whatsoever that devolves upon it, and even Gizan Avodah you're mutter to do, because it's not even qualified to become Kadosh. It's not even in the world of something that you can make Kadosh for a Korban Olah. The Rashi says, the Pasuk's kind to teach us that this here is even worse than a Baal Mum Ikaro, because over here, it would not have an Easter of Gizan Avodah. The Baal Tos would say, that's not really different than any other Baal Mum Ikaro. That's not a unique din over here. Even by a regular Baal Mum Ikaro, there's no Easter Gizan Avodah Midoraita. It's only Midorabanan. There's no restriction Midoraita. Why do you need a Pasuk to tell me that it's mutar b'gizah b'avodah? And so if you're telling me there's no Easter gizah b'avodah, that's not something that's unique here. Why is that any different than a baal mumi karo? If that's the case, then Rashi hasn't solved the problem as to why I need a pasuk over here. He says, v'yesh perush acherim b'rashi. It also brings another perush in Rashi, which we don't have. So that what this pasuk is coming to teach us is that the slit or the charitz by the makom nekevot is considered to be a mum. That's what the pasuk is teaching us. Not like Abaye, not like Rava before, who said that only by Makom Etzem is a Charitza problem. Over here, what they're teaching you, and that's what Rabbi Shmuel's belief is that a Charitz, that is, Makom Basar, is a Mum. And that's what we learned from the Pasuk over here. That's why you need a Pasuk to teach you that Chiddush, that a Charitz, Makom Basar, is a Mum. And that's why you need the extra Pasuk here. And then Tosva brings a third possibility from the Ri, that the Itzrech Lemute Lashmina the Garami Baal Mum. To tell you that this is worse than a Baal Mum. Because a Baal Mum, mi'ikaro, is nitpas bitmura. If you then try to exchange it, the tmura works. But over here, it's a lower level, or something that's excluded so much, that it doesn't even have the status of a Baal Mum mi'ikaro, where tmura would apply, where certain dinim would apply. That's not true over here, by the case where it is a zakhar bimumo imo. Because of the fact that the androgynous has this pre-existing mum, but the exclusion from the pasuk tells us it doesn't function like a mum ikaro. It's even worse than that. It doesn't have any kedusha whatsoever. It's not even nikpas bit murah. So there are three different reasons as to why you would need a pasuk over here, even though it's a zakhar bin mumo imo, which would automatically disqualify it. You have three different possibilities as to why you need a pasuk. Either to teach you that there's no Easter of Giza Baboda according to Rashi, according to the second view in Rashi, to teach you that a charitz b'makom basar is classified as a mum. According to the Ri, it's coming to teach you that this is less than a baal mum ikaro, because a baal mum ikaro would at least have impact with regards to tmura. This doesn't even have impact with regards to tmura. Eleyamart misveikalei, if he's uncertain as to whether it is a zachar or nekeva, it's strictly mute sveika, then you're back to the Tanakama's problem, which is, why do you need a pasuk to eliminate a safek? A safek between a nekeva and a zachar, the androgynous is one of the two. So, it's either a zakhar or it is a nekeva, you just don't know, and all androgynouses are the same, you don't need a pasuk to tell you that. The Torah knows whether it's a zakhar or nekeva, you just don't know. That would have given us evidence, the fact that Rabbi Shmuel believes that androgynous is a full-fledged zakhar, it's a bechor b'mumo imo, but it's a zakhar. And my says, lolam rabbanan batrai. No. The rabbanan batrai are the authors of this braita. V'gabi bechor, tarte krai k'tiv, hazakhar ve'azicharim. By Bechor, there are also two psukim over there, not just one time the word zachar. Imrei, in Dvarim Tevav, Pasuk Yutet, it says, Kol Bechor, Shiv Elecha, Bebecharecha, Betonecha, HaZachar, Tatish, Hashem Elokecha, Lo Tavo, Bebechor, Sherecha, Lo Tago, Bechor, Tzonecha. So there's the word zachar that appears. And now we're saying that there's not only the word zachar, but also the word HaZicharim, which gives you an additional miut, which is found in the Pasuk in Parashat Bo, in Vayakiv Yacha, where it says, Vavata kopechem rechem lashem, kopeter sheger beima sheilecha, hazicharim lashem. So over there it says the word zicharim. So you see that by Bechor, we also have zachar and zicharim. That means the Rabbanan Batrai, by Bechor, the first zachar comes to exclude a nekeva, and then the second zachar, the zicharim, comes to exclude an androgynous, and maybe a tumtum as well. And so over here, you have the word zachar that's repeated twice, One zachar to teach you not in a keba. The second zachar to teach you not in androgynous and a tumtum. And so therefore, they'll be the authors of this position. And now we have no evidence as to what Rabbi Shmuel's position is, whether he thinks it's a safek, or whether he thinks it's mifshat shitalei, but it's just a zachar b'mumo. Tosavot commenting on this mention of the Gemara about zachar zicharim says, "Bim tomar halo below zachim nami matzin the maid androgynous may has zachar k'mo b'samuch in arachim uvnida." So as it says, why do you need a second zachar to exclude androgynous? Upcoming in the Gemara tomorrow, we're going to see that the Gemara uses the word zachar to exclude androgynous and tumtum, and clearly there the zachar is also excluding a nikema. So why do you need an extra pasuk over here? It says v'yesh lamar d'shema od drashot acherot yesh v'kray tuba ptivi b'bechor. Says maybe there are a lot of other drashot that you can use because there are many psukim written by the bechor. V'kulu tzrichei, and we need all of them. So now the Gemara is suggesting that you need the word zacharim, but later on when the Gemara goes and says you can learn it all out of zachar, maybe it does the same thing over here, and the word zacharim we'll use for a different limud, and he says we have plenty of limudim that we need by bechorot that can cover and use these words up, and therefore we could learn it all from one word. But at this point the Gemara is indicating that the Rabbanan Batrai learned it out from the duplication of zachar by bechor, and so too by olah, they're going to learn it out from the duplication of the word zachar. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Mem Aleph Amud Bet.